I was just asking before you guys popped in, Andy and Patrick, I was just asking Steve how this all sort of got started as far as his involvement. Steve, could you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I simply received a phone call from Andy, who had been doing studies, as I understand it, wind studies, using topographical maps. And he introduced himself to me and asked what my interest would be in using some of my land that's not being used any other way to run some studies and tests to see if it what kind of wind capacity it had on it, what kind of wind it had. And so from that simple conversation some years ago, here we are today.
And you're in Gadsden, right?
I am. I'm in Etowah County. I'm a resident of Etowah County.
Okay. And so why your land in particular?
Well, you know, my land in particular is simply because it happens to be a land that it generates wind, which is the basic requirement for a wind project. And building on that, my land, because I support the project, I agree with the philosophy of the project. I think that it's something that we need to do in our society is to diversify our energy sources. And I also like a lot of things about the benefits of wind energy. And so from that perspective, here we are today.
And, well, I guess Andy and Patrick, you guys can jump in, but where are we today? How far along is the project, if at all?
Steve, we can take that one. This is Andy, Patrick and I are both, you know, no different parts of the project. But the project, there are two different projects that we're working on, one in Etowah County and one in Cherokee County. And we've been working on both of these projects for several years. The phone call that Steve mentioned earlier happened more than 10 years ago. Steve, I think we figured out the other day.
I think it was 12 years ago, Andy, yes.
12 years ago, yeah. And obviously we weren't successful for some period of time, although we did all the wind studies and a variety of other studies, wildlife studies, electrical studies to see what we can inject in the power grid at that location. But really, for the last 3 years, we've been very focused on the projects that we're developing now. And we've completed a huge amount of study on the site, studying the wind, studying the wildlife, studying the grid interconnection possibilities, studying archaeological features in the area, all kinds of study we've done, and we're at the point now of looking to get the permits for the project that we need and the other agreements in place so that we can proceed to finance and hopefully construct the project.
Okay, so I have a news release from, I guess this is probably from a few years ago, but this is when I guess they were announced, they were saying that the Shinbone Wind Energy Center was planned for the first or second quarter of 2014. I guess that was that maybe overly ambitious?
Yeah, I think that's right. That's what we were thinking at the time. We do have, what we're looking at now is hopefully a schedule that's about a year behind that. To get to construction in 2015, but we still need some permits, we still need some key agreements, and we're still working to get those.
Okay, gotcha. So for Steve's property, so he's in Etowah County. So is that the Nakalula? Am I saying that right, Nakalula?
That's right. That's right, Jeremy.
Okay,
the Nakalula project.
Okay, so we're talking, from here it says 40 turbines, 80 megawatts. Is that still what you guys are shooting for?
Yeah, Jeremy, this is Patrick. We've, you know, in our efforts to study the wind, we've also looked at a few different turbines that are available on the market, which vary in size. So, the project size that we've been aiming for is around 80 megawatts. and anywhere from 35 to 50 turbines.
Okay, gotcha. Let's see. So the reason we're talking right now, obviously, is because of the Senate Bill 12. It's my understanding that they're going to discuss that today before the Senate floor. I don't know exactly if that's going to happen, but it is on the schedule from what I can tell. There was an amended version of the bill as well. So the one that I was looking at before was talking about these rules that would, you know, cap decibel levels. Well, I guess, you know, you guys may know more about this than me. What can you tell me about the bill and as far as its progress, Senate Bill 12?
What we know is that the bill has been introduced and it's been passed out of committee. And I think the next step in the process would be to put it to a vote on the Senate floor and get it out of the Senate. You're saying it's up for discussion today, and that'd be news for us. So you may – I'm not sure who has the better information between us.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Well, let's see. It is on the schedule for today. It was, I guess, discussed last week as well, but they carried it over. Let's see. Yeah, Senate Bill 12. And no action has been taken in the House, correct?
That's our understanding, yep.
Okay, and you guys are talking to me from Austin, I take it, right?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm sure you guys have looked at least the original bill. Do you have a position on it as far as you know where you stand on it?
We do, and we can give you our view, and Steve would have an opinion as well. Our view is that the bill would basically put a moratorium on wind projects in Alabama. The heart of it is the setbacks. And our sense, and we've communicated our concerns to Senator Williams, our sense is that the setbacks are designed to be so restrictive and out of step with other setbacks that have been adopted in states around the country that it's going to make it, you know, not possible to secure all the land rights necessary to build projects in Alabama. So that's our point of view.
Why would you think that would be, if you believe that it would be a sort of a moratorium, is that sort of your view on maybe the unintended consequences, or do you believe that the legislators are actually just trying to stop wind power in Alabama?
I think we have real concerns that may be the real goal of this legislation, is to just make sure that our projects in particular, but also, you know, wind in general, can't be built in Alabama. The particulars of the setback provisions are so out of line with other parts of the country that regulate growing wind industry, wind projects. It's a pretty well-settled area, and there are industry norms, and these are go way beyond that. So it's hard for us to avoid the conclusion that that's what's going on. You know, we're just trying to work with Senator Williams to get changes made that would allow the industry to grow. We bring a lot of jobs, a lot of investment, a lot of tax base to communities that need them. And it would be a real shame if this bill passes the way it is and it ends up making the entire wind industry move on to the next state.
Now, you guys have projects in other states, I assume, as you know a lot about the regulations in other states. How many projects do you guys have or how many wind farms, I guess, are you running currently?
Well, we're a developer of projects, and three of our projects in Texas are under construction. We do wind and solar. We have a couple solar projects in California that are moving into construction soon. And we're developing a number of projects in the eastern part of the country that have not reached construction stage yet. We won't ultimately be the owner of the projects. Usually it's big affiliates of publicly traded utilities that own and operate the projects. And our role here is as a developer.
And are the public utility companies, are they interested?
Certainly. I mean, some of the biggest owners of wind projects in the country are NextEra Energy, which is an affiliate of Florida Power and Light, MidAmerican, which is one of Warren Buffett's companies. There's a strong interest in wind projects and solar projects all over the country.
Can you tell me, you mentioned that these restrictions go way beyond what you guys have seen in other states. Can you give me some specifics as far as what you're talking about?
One of the provisions has a certain distance from turbines that are constructed that has to be set back from other tracts of property. The way that most wind legislation works is it sets back turbines sufficient distance away from other homes or other structures as opposed to property lines. And so when you set the requirements back from property lines, you can have a piece of raw land somewhere that is within the setback distance, and you won't be able to proceed with your project. You won't be able to obtain the permits that you need where there are small tracts of land that are situated too close to the turbine locations. That may not be explained very well, but it means that you either have to go and get permission of someone who's not involved in the project and doesn't really have a stake in whether it's proceeding or not, or you simply won't be permitted under the rules because the location of the project. In parts of the country with very large tracts of land, these kinds of setbacks can be a non-issue because the tracts that you're working with are so large. And all the work that we've done in Alabama, tracts are smaller. And when they're smaller, they're closer to neighboring tracts owned by different owners. And so having unusually large setbacks means you've got to go and get permissions from all of those owners, or you simply won't qualify for the permit. So that's the way the constraint works.
Jeremy, if I could kick in on this. This is Steve. Looking at this as a landowner in Alabama, I think the current of the setback, which is, I think, been rewritten with a formula that basically has the same net effect, simply requires that any constructed tower be 2,000 to 2,500 foot from any property line that any of your property lines. Now, what this means is that a section of property, which is 640 acres, if it was square and if it were a square piece of property, you could put one tower in the exact center of that property, and it would be 2,500 foot from your four property lines. So in rural Alabama, small landowners such as myself, that would be a moratorium on wind farms because it would take 60 square miles of property contiguous to be able to have 40 or 45 towers. And so that requirement, that setback, just takes the all possibility of the wind farm out of the realm of possibility. It's my understanding that in Etowah County, a setback, a requirement for a coal mine, as an example, is 300 foot to a resident, to a building, to a home. And that's very different than having a setback of 2,500 feet to a property line. And so when you stop and think about this, that setback by its very nature restricts and causes the wind farms that are designed by nature, designed to be on small tracts of property, it eliminates the possibility. And to a certain extent, it affects the rights of every personal property owner in Alabama, and rural Alabama, particularly from a reasonable use of the property. And so, you know, that's a concern. And so I think the bill, the legislation could be great. As it is, it's a moratorium. And, you know, and so our elected officials will look at this and make the best decision that they can. In the meantime, I've got a perspective on wind energy, and I'd like to tell you how I personally like it. From my perspective as a minister and as a resident of Edwell County, I like the fact that wind energy is truly clean energy. It's clean far beyond all the environmental issues that go along with most energy production. You see, when I talk about clean energy, it's clean in that the revenues that's produced for our communities are also clean. Revenues from a wind energy project such as this one would have no harmful side effects on our children or our homes or the poor, as does revenue on other such sources like alcohol or even lottery sales. Now, I think regardless of how you feel about those other things, clean energy, beyond the energy it produces, but clean energy to the revenue that puts back in the community, that's something that everyone can and everyone should enthusiastically support. And not only is the energy, not only that, but the energy stream to our community, which is Edwell County, would be substantial. Revenues from this wind project that's been worked on in our county, according to, I think, an independent study from Jacksonville State, would range from $700,000 to $1.1 million a year in revenue stream. And that's money that our community needs. The way our millage rates work, I think they say that up to $400,000 a year would flow right into our educational system. Our county school system needs that money. Our sheriff's department and men and women who work to give themselves to us for our safety and well-being would also benefit. I suppose that our county commission could use the monies for other things as well, like volunteer fire departments and even road maintenance. In short, this wind farm would be a win-win for every person. I guess I should say, no pun intended, but it is something that everyone in our county can and should get behind when you consider all the positive effects of it with no negative side effects.
Now, do you see people getting behind it in your county?
Well, yes, I do. I see people for it. I see people against it. And I think that I think it's like everything else. I think that for anyone to make a good sound judgment, a good sound decision on anything, you need to gather information, accurate information, not anecdotal information, but accurate information, proven facts. And I think that there is probably a lack of knowledge in our county, and really this doesn't have a lot of publicity yet as to what the benefits could be. And I think there are folks who are in opposition to it, and they certainly have that right and that privilege, and I support that right and that privilege. You know, they have their reasons for it. A wind farm may not or may be something that you would like to look at. Those are decisions everyone has to make. But at the end of the day, there are 45,000 turbines, I think, spinning in the United States, and we have to diversify our energy. But it's a great way to help our community without the side effects of other things that are much more harmful that we do support as a society. And so from that perspective, I think that once the information is out there and once people really learn and know what's going on, I think there will be a groundswell of support for not only this project, for other projects like it.
Did we lose somebody?
I don't know.
Sounds like we may have.
Well, Jeremy, I'm sorry. It's just you and I.
Oh, that's all right. Well, I want to go back just a second ago, because you were talking about the rewritten part of the law. I think you're probably looking at the same thing that I am, because the original bill.
I think what happened. They put a formula in there, formula that says the setback would be a multiple of the height of the tower from the tower to the property line.
Exactly. Yeah.
A tower can be, from what I understand it, and I wish Andy didn't hear, but I think a tower can be from 300 to 550 foot tall, and that's a tall tower. So, you know, if there's a multiple of five, it's going to be somewhere close to 2,000 to 3,000 feet from a property line. And, you know, that would take myself and all the other landowners. I'm just one of many landowners in this project. It will take it out because, you know, our land is, our property shapes are different, you know, and so that in itself would eliminate or put a moratorium on small wind farms like this across rural Alabama, and it would affect not only myself and the landowners in this project, but it will affect every landowner in Alabama and affect the property value, driving the property value down, because when there's a potential for a project like this, your property values go up. And so it will have a negative effect on our property values as well if the legislation passes in this form.
Now what I'm looking at, and this was an amended version submitted by Senator Williams. It says wind energy conversion system may not encroach upon occupied residential or commercial structures, not property lines, but residential or commercial structures for public use areas as determined by a measure of five times the height of the turbine tower. So on your property, would that make a difference? I mean, are the surrounding properties around you, do they have structures where people are living or commercial structures?
Well, they do, but I think that if that has been changed, I agree with the concept that it should be to the structure itself. And I just think it should be a reasonable industry-accepted distance. In other words, last year I think there was legislation introduced by Senator Williams that made the setback 750 foot, and it's since changed to a multiple that almost triples that setback. I don't know what's caused the difference between those two bills. But I do know, based on what I've read and what I understand, and I'm not the expert, that except for on very large tracts across the country, that those setbacks are more in the range of 1,000 to 1,500 foot to a building.
Okay, gotcha. Do we have Andy and Patrick? Are you guys back?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, no worries. So we heard the noise. So we were talking about the distance. I also wanted to ask you guys about, we know.
Let me break in, Jeremy. You might ask Andy about that change in the bill. I'm not well-versed on it.
Oh, okay. Well, just to run it by you, and without getting, you know, too terribly technical, we were talking about the 2,500-foot buffer, which, as Steve mentioned, that has been changed, at least in a version that was introduced, to five times the height of a turbine tower. The main point, though, of that, and it makes me wonder whether or not this is a good faith effort or to help guys like Steve actually build it or not, is that instead of going to the edge of a property line, it's just to an actual residential or commercial structure. And so maybe a bigger property, if there is, well, you I think you get what I'm saying.
I mean, the key here is that the proper setback is to other structures, not to property lines. And if the bill has changed recently, we may not have the most recent version of it. And there are different kinds of setbacks covered in the bill. There are setbacks associated with sound, and the sound under the language in the bill, in the version that we have, is measured at the property boundary of the property on which the turbines are being constructed, and that's out of step with the way other jurisdictions do this around the country. They measure sound as it can be heard by receptors, which are inhabited residences or buildings or businesses. The heart of this, as we were saying, is the setback. We are concerned that the setbacks are being designed to make impossible the projects that are currently being developed and other projects that can be developed in the future in Alabama.
Right. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, too, because obviously we're going to get too complicated if we try to look at this current bill. But the version that I'm looking at changed the 40 decibel to 50 decibels, and it also it says it's measured at the property line of the property on which the system has been installed, and it's an average of 50 decibels is the limit. It looks to me like they've eased it somewhat. I'm not sure if that still makes the project impossible or not, but it looks like they have come back a little bit, from what I can tell. And I'm not sure.
I agree that the move from 40 to 50 decibels is a move in the right direction. But the linkage to measurement at property boundaries puts it at the same point. It needs to be measured at residences or inhabited structures as opposed to the property line. There, with the small tracts, as Steve was describing, there are so many different tracts that would be affected by that kind of a setback. It just makes the project, you're not going to meet the requirements of the statute, which requires you apply to the PSC, and they look at all the details to ensure that the requirements have been met, and that's the concern.
With the concerns about sound, I've never even been close to one of these wind turbines before, but I have heard a report that was sort of a story about people who owned property, had one of these wind turbines put in, and were sort of stunned at how loud that they actually are. I'm wondering, Steve, if you've actually talked to any of people that have had turbines on their lands, and whether or not you've actually experienced it yourself also.
Oh, Jeremy, I have spoken to people who have turbines on their land, and I just spoke recently with a lady this past week who lives here in Etowah County, and I won't call her name, she would prefer me not to, who is a part of the wind project. And she and her husband traveled to New York and visited wind farms. And she says she visited with a lady who had a turbine very close to her house. The setback rule there is different. And she said the lady said that she was really opposed to the wind project when it was being set up. And she said today she's very glad that the project was built. The lady I talked to said she could not hear any noise from 600 or 700 feet away from the large turbine. And she said that it was really surprising to her. And I don't know a lot about sound decibels, but I do understand that, 50 decibels is probably in the neighborhood of the loudness of our conversation here. And, down here in Little Alabama with all the noise factors that we have with gun ranges and road traffic and with trains and with everything else, that's a pretty big restriction compared to no restriction on all the other things. But I really believe that I think that based on what I have read and I've also talked to folks who were involved in construct and develop a wind project. I'm talking about landowners, not the Andes of the world, but landowners in another state. And he talked about once it was built, how quiet it was. And I have been, I've seen wind farms in going up the corridor to Pennsylvania, and I've been out to California and seen those wind farms. And I lived in Illinois and saw those wind farms. And with 45,000 of these things spinning in the United States, it's very it's just obvious to me that if the noise was such a factor, that there would be such an outcry and a hue over it that we would all know about it. So I think that we have to respect other people's property, other people's privacy. I absolutely agree to that. And I think there's a way to do it without making it so onerous that a project cannot be constructed. And I think just common sense and decency and what's happened in the industry here, that's already, that there's already a proven track record of these things that would show us what is good and acceptable.
Andy Patrick, do you guys know what decibel level does a turbine reach typically, I guess, on average?
I mean, Jeremy, this is Patrick. It depends on where you are, obviously, in relation to the turbine. But 50 decibels, as you were referencing a minute ago, is about the same noise that's generated by a dishwasher in the room next to you, and it's also equivalent to quiet urban daytime. So 50 decibels, that's not the issue for us with the bill. It's just the issue that we have is where that decibel level, where we're restricted to from a private, an adjacent property line versus a house. So the precedent that this sets, we're held to a much stricter standard than any other industry that we're aware of in the state of Alabama. And so we feel like not only is this out of line with industry standards, you know, typically we'll find setbacks of this noise level to a house. But this is definitely a very, very strict regulation from a property boundary line. And then comparing it to the other industries, you look at the coal industry, a coal mine can be placed 300 feet from a home and 100 feet from a property boundary line. So we don't feel like we're getting a fair shake when it comes to other industries in Alabama.
This is probably too speculative, I guess, to ask, but you guys have been dealing with this for a long time, and you've probably spoken to Senator Williams. Do you have any speculation as to what a reason he might have for if he is trying to put a stop to this project, why he might be doing that?
Well, I think with a lot of things in life in general, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, so to speak, and there are a vocal minority of landowners who are opposed to this project. There are also a group of business owners, business leaders, appointed representatives in these counties that support the project as well. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, in this situation, you know, this bill is really calling out our two projects in general. And, you know, for different reasons, you know, the intent of it is I don't think as go ahead.
Well, just one thing I'd add, Jeremy, is that, you know, renewable energy in general has been historically a bipartisan issue. The wind tax was passed originally by George H.W. Bush in 1993. It's been renewed by presidents, Republican and Democrat, Congresses, Republican and Democrat. And it's, you know, there's a lot of politics now about renewables in general for some reason, you know, and it does seem that that's playing a role to some degree that could have to do with the reasons why the bill's being pursued now in the way that it is. But it's certainly more political now and partisan than it ever has been before.
You mean because you would say renewable energy is sort of seen as a liberal thing and doesn't bode well in a conservative place like Alabama, I guess, is what you're saying?
Well, you know, I think that there's, you know, that's one way to stereotype it, but I don't know that that'd be accurate. I mean, wind is something like, you know, 85% of the wind turbines installed in the U.S. are in Republican congressional districts. Some of the red states are big leaders of wind. Several Republican senators and governors and congresspeople are some of the bigger supporters of wind. Governor Brownback in Canada. I mean, I'm sorry, Governor Brownback in Kansas. Senator Grassley in Iowa. Texas, which is one of the reddest states there is, would be the fourth biggest installed wind power country in the world if it were a country. So it's not as clear in that way. It does seem that it's become much more partisan very recently in the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. There is still a basis for bipartisan support of wind and solar. There's even been actions in Georgia that have seen Tea Party supporters pushing for a lot of solar initiatives there, and they've been very effective. So I don't think it's fair to say that it's a purely political issue, but it does seem that some of the opposition that our projects face has to do with people who believe that the stimulus program is still in effect with regard to renewable projects. But those programs have run their course, and the only federal subsidy available to wind is the same subsidy that's been in place since George H.W. Bush passed it.
All right. Well, guys, I think this has been really great. I'm not sure if I have any other questions about the project. Is there anything else any of you would like to add?
Well, I just think this is a great opportunity for undeveloped property, and also for the owners of undeveloped property to be able to add something back into the community and to make the resources that we have much more productive, and to make our lives better, and to have a positive effect long-term on our educational process and on these rural communities that for years and years and years have languished and scraped by every year and could use the extra added benefits that these revenues would bring. And so in that regard, the fact that also that our counties would not have to invest anything. There's no investment. Most of the industries that come to town require tax breaks, and require a lot on their part for the industry to come to town. There's nothing here that's been asked of our county, other than some road permits to be able to bring the parks in to construct it. But it would bring a couple $100 million or close to it in Etowah County in the construction phase. And again, over a course of 30 years, clean money with no negative side effects on our society. And I like that very much, and I feel like it's something that we all need to consider and think about as we work to enhance the lives of our children and our grandchildren.